I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The Way Up North podcast is supported by Wooden Banana. Wooden Banana has delivered personalized wooden packaging for photographers since 2014 and has since connected with thousands of photographers from around the world. Their handmade wooden products range from CD and print boxes through to custom USBs. All individually engraved with your branding, giving your client delivery the love it deserves no matter where you are in the world. Wooden Banana has partnered with Way Up North for 3 events in a row and is offering a 10% discount on all their products using the purchasing code 110. So give them a look at woodenbanana.com or follow their store and Instagram via the hashtag woodenbanana. Ashley and Jeremy Parsons. This is a very heavy conversation and one we hope you enjoy until the very end. My name is Cole Roberts and this is the Way Up North podcast. Today, host Jenny Hamara speaks with We Are the Parsons, a husband and wife team from the States. While this is obviously a photography podcast, we strive for it to be much more. Our goal is for you to gain insight into the real lives of the people out there in our wedding photography community. And this episode certainly met that goal. The Parsons are remarkably open about everything going on in their lives, and it's deep. Real issues like life and death awoke them from the blur and facade of the online world, and they have an incredible story to share. Jenny nails the interview, and this is a fluid conversation from start to finish. Settle in because it gets very real. So here we go. We Are the Parsons, speaking with Jenny Hamara in June 2016.
Okay, so I'm looking at the Parsons sitting in a trailer. That's all I know. You guys look beautiful first thing in the morning.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.
On my first cup of coffee. So
but you're not straight out of bed if you have small kids. When do they sleep
I'm
until...
I'm not straight out of bed.
You are.
I am. We have some really wonderful summer rituals where... if we've stayed up really late working or hosting people, Jeremy will let me sleep in for about an hour past when the kids get up, and then he'll wake me up with coffee. He's basically best husband ever.
Wow. Can you talk to my husband?
Yeah, exactly.
Have your husband call me.
Yeah, I will.
Yeah.
Did you guys, were you up late last night?
Yeah, we had some friends over.
I mean, it felt late for us. It was probably not that late.
It was probably like 11, but we're like old people. So.
Well, that is late. Yeah. So where are you guys living right now? I feel like you guys recently moved. Did I make that up?
No, you did not make that up. We just moved 3 months ago to the day. I think.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you're right.
So we live in Kansas City, Missouri. So if you look at America, it's basically right in the middle.
Okay.
And right in the place that you usually fly over if you come to America.
Yeah.
It's a city that is kind of in the middle of plains and farmland, but it is it's a great city. And we've lived here for about 11 years. Okay. And so 3 months ago, we moved from the urban core to kind of the outskirts, a larger open plot with more space and good schools for our kids and a really, really great home that was built in 1887. So
it was
a great move for us. So
that's really cool. Were you guys looking for something like, is it a fixer-upper or
It kind of is. I mean, cosmetically, it's a major fixer-upper. We've done a lot to it. And I think for the first 2 months, there wasn't a day, if we weren't working for a wedding or an event, we were working on the house. We were ripping up carpets and painting walls and replacing plumbing and doing all kinds of crazy stuff. But that's kind of, that's the blessing and the curse with an older home. You know, you adopt everything that's wrong with it. But then as we pour into it, it's so ours now. Yeah. You know, even just 3 months in, it feels like we've been here for 10 years. And hopefully that we will be here for a lot longer than that. It's a really special place.
Yeah, it's like incomplete right now. Yeah. But those places of incompleteness, there are places of incompleteness, you know, like,
yeah. Oh yeah.
That's our mess. You know, like,
that's ugly in that corner. Cause I ripped that carpet up and it's like, and I haven't yet had a time to fix it.
Exactly.
Oh my God. But that is nice. Cause you get to pick your own colors and you're doing things like, and there's something about, I feel like there's like a soul in an older house that it could be good or bad. I mean, but
hey, no, there really is. And there is something to, story, you know, as storytellers, we're obsessed with stories. And so just walking through those rooms and wondering, I mean, really, in the 1800s, who was born here? Yeah. You know, who died here, who loved someone here and raised children here? It's just such a cool thing to know that there is well over 100 years of history and story already going on in these bones. And now we get to add to it, you know?
Yeah, that is really cool. We have,
yeah, we live.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I was just going to say, we live right down the street from a cemetery, and we walk there pretty often, like in the evenings, we'll take a walk with the kids and they'll ride their bikes or something. We'll walk through the rows of different gravestones, and it does kind of bring you back to this place of, wow, this is real history. Like,
yeah.
If our house was built back then, we're seeing gravestones from people that were dying in the turn of the century, you know, 1905 or something, and going, I wonder if they knew the people that were in the house. And it kind of, it's kind of a cathartic experience when you walk through that, just to see history having played out. And so it's fun to own this house in that way. So
do you feel like you guys are in a phase of doing that kind of deep thinking about like life and death?
I feel like we are, and we have been for years. And it really started to affect our work probably 6 years ago, maybe even 7 years ago, when all of a sudden my dad, who was the person at that point that both Jeremy and I were closest to, got cancer and had, you know, 2 months to live. And he lived almost a year, and we were very, very close to him. He was both of our best friends, and we just kind of watched him live his last year of life, and every day with a lot of joy, a lot of hope, a lot of intentionality. And at the end of that year, I remember him talking to someone and saying, you know, for the first time in my life, I can look back on this year and say, not one of these days was wasted. And I don't think I could say that before. And so when he died, we were present, we were in the room, we were holding his hand, and literally his soul left his body, and everything changed for us, because it's so easy, right, to just walk around on this mud ball with all the other people walking around on this mud ball, and to think that today is just today, tomorrow will be tomorrow, 10 years from now will be 10 years from now. And the reality is, the choices that we make today, the way we think about our lives and our family and the people that come into it today, that's everything. And And that's setting patterns for how we live the rest of our lives and remember them, regrets or not. And so so that loss being so massive and leaving such a huge gaping hole, because when you lose someone like that, no one else can replace them. Okay. We just started to explore that and honestly to feel it, to feel the joy that comes from being really alive, to feel the emptiness that comes from death and knowing that we're going to die, that, you know, 10 out of 10 people just do.
Yeah, that's just inevitable. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and so I think that being open to that was a really fascinating thing, because then our work started to be informed by, you know, as a friend of ours said the other day, and we're like, that's exactly it. I don't really need to make cool pictures anymore. I just want to make photographs very aware that that father of the bride is going to die someday.
Yeah.
And so it changed our work and it changed the way that we live and treat one another. And then of course, as the wonderful, ironic spirit of God would have it, we were given by adoption our third son, who has insane medical needs and had brain surgery when he was a baby, and had brain surgery again in February. And 2 weeks ago, he was in the ICU for a week, and it looked like we would lose him. And so death and the reality of the presence of how precious life is and how uncatchable it is. We can't clasp it in our fist and keep it. It's changed us, and it makes us who we are. And as morbid as that sounds, to walk around in a cemetery every night as a family, you know, and see headstones of 5-year-olds, and to realize that could very much happen to us. Man, it's hard, but it sure does keep you from making some really bonehead mistakes the next day, you know?
Reminding yourself of what the priorities are, you know?
Exactly. It's a lot easier to not look at social media after whatever 15 months it's been now since we quit. It's a lot easier to not have a television. It's a lot easier to be intentional with what we spend our time on, because there is an awareness that who knows how much of it there is.
Yeah.
And we want to make it count, you know?
And not just with like media and how we treat that. But you know, there's an intentionality and an urgency, I feel like, in terms of like forgiveness and having relationship, you know, on good standing. There's a, you know, there's an intentionality to, and an urgency to parent well. And like, we get one crack with these little boys who are swiftly becoming young men.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's terrifying to think, oh, in about 6 years, one of them's going to be gone.
Right.
No, that's unacceptable. He can't be growing that fast.
I refuse to accept it there.
And in 4 years, he'll be driving. It's like, dear members of Earth,
be
take
careful.
2 months off the road. Just take a break.
This is not going to work out well. This cannot end well.
This should scare all of us.
I don't think he can see over the steering wheel, so be aware of that.
What did you say, Jeremy, about forgiveness? You said in regards to the kids, you mean, or like?
Oh gosh, in regard to each other. I mean, we've been married as of July 7th, which is in a week. We will have been married 15 years.
Wow!
And so we have. Yep. High five.
High five for that. Totally.
It's a high five.
Is that what you do after 15 years? You don't kiss anymore. You just high five each other. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. The kissing comes later. The high five is the foreplay.
Yeah. Right. In 20 years, it's like a fist bump, and then you're just like the head nod after.
No, I mean, 15 years it has flown by, and you know, it would be a total lie to say that it has been a breeze the entire time. No, it hasn't been bad. It's been wonderful and amazing, and I'm so thankful for it. But every anniversary that we come around to is like a reminder that, hey, I'm a really broken person, and I'm married to a broken person, and there's a deeper acceptance of the fact that that just is the way that it is.
Yeah.
And that's the way it's meant to be, you know.
Yeah.
She's a person, so she's not going to meet every single one of my needs deeply.
Right.
And that frees me up to say, she's just a person I can forgive, and vice versa, because she's married to a very broken, you know, a-hole of a man, asshole, you know. I'm just...
Very handsome, so, though.
Yeah, right.
Just a... Yeah, I'm a jerk sometimes, and like, it... With all that said, like, you know, if life is going to end someday, and the chances are really strong that one of us is going to put the other one in the ground, you know, we walk through that cemetery, and it's a reminder of that when we see a spouse at somebody's gravestone, you know, mourning. We're going, okay, if that's going to happen to us, then today I want to forgive you. Today I want to be at peace with you. Today I want to love you for the broken person that you are.
Yeah.
So, does that make sense?
Totally. I mean,
okay.
It's actually really beautifully said. I mean, yeah, I mean, I've been married for 10 years. I also have small kids. I mean, I totally relate to that. Obviously, if somebody's like, you know, this person that I'm with is perfect, there's nothing wrong with him, then you're just like, okay, wow. That's more scary to me than actually being like, we have problems. I mean, life is not easy. And like you said, this whole idea that I think a lot of people have, maybe even on their wedding day, sadly, that, you know, this person is going to fill all of my needs, is going to be, you know, everything. And that can be short-lived sometimes when you start to realize that you want to, yeah, that you're, that is not possible.
Yeah. Well, and I think after 10 years of marriage, at least, we started, because of the loss of my dad, we started going to these weddings, and you know, the first 10 years had enough trouble on their own. It's a fist fight sometimes, you know? And so we just decided, man, we're with these couples. We have them for part of the day. We have them completely to ourselves. We're going to make photographs of them. We're going to be probably the people closest to them in proximity all day long.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So we have a chance to be honest with them, because they do invite us into that close space as though we were a family member or a friend. And so we started to kind of take that illusion that, yay, you just married your soulmate who's going to meet every need, and just thoroughly shred that. and in a really not mean or nasty way, but just to put our cameras down for a millisecond and give them this little pep talk of, hey, we know everything's really wonderful right now. And look at all these people who have come from far away to be here, and look at the dress, and look at the detail, look at all of this. This is just crazy, right, y'all? This is great. Here's the problem. We've lived it, and there's going to come a day, and it might be really soon, where you want to break every single promise you just made.
Yeah.
And there's going to come a day where you may break them. You may break most of them. And so what marriage is about is not the keeping of the promises or the remembering of the details or a wedding. Marriage is about who I am and who I offer to you when you do that, what I become. Mm-hmm. Marriage is about fighting through that, you know? And so it's been kind of cool to be able to offer that to our couples and to hear from them afterwards. I think more than even the photographs, we hear from them about that time. that moment where we kind of bring them together into reality and we give them this gift of it's worth it. And the photos we're going to make now, we want you to look back on those and remember this. Remember right. that it's worth it. Remember what we were talking about here. And
yeah. I was just going to say, I think that must offer them a lot of comfort too, to hear that, because I think people freak out sometimes when it's like, and especially, I mean, in the States, sometimes people don't even live together before they get married. So it's like, all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, it's not all like roses and, it's probably nice to remember what you told them, and you guys are like a lovely couple, like just saying, just, you know, bear through it and like trust in yourselves or whatever you say to them. I mean, it doesn't sound morbid. It sounds like that would be really comforting to hear. Like, okay, we're at this. You guys should actually run the ceremony, I feel like.
Yeah, it's meant to be good news, not bad news. Right. I mean, the good news is when you release somebody to just be a person and you don't have that iron-fisted, like, I must have your complete obedience all the time. Like, it really frees you just to love and to be loved also.
Yeah.
And it's not to say that we do that perfectly right now. Like, this is it's a growing skill over the decades. Yeah. But the longer that we've been married, the more that I think we're realizing that's what marriage is. Like, you know, you grow in small amounts and then but you keep at it over a long time. And then you look back over 15 years and you go, gosh, I was such a freaking child when we got married. Mm-hmm. And I'm thankful to be where we are right now with a deeper level of maturity, hopefully. And I certainly love her more than I did on our wedding day. And that's after a lot of the storms and the battles and stuff. So yeah, it's odd to be wedding photographers and to have been married for 15 years. Cause I think when we first started in wedding photography, it was like, oh man, weddings are really fun. Like everything about them. And look, they're great events. They are. But with a greater level of maturity and kind of an awareness of the finality of life, they've become this kind of living microcosm, if you will, of life playing out. It's the beginning of a story. It's not the story itself. It's not the pinnacle of the story. It's the first day. And someday these images have a chance to be at somebody's funeral. And that's a pretty inspiring thought. So
that's huge. These photos are important. And they're, like you said, they're somebody's, you know, they're hugs and moments and like looks, you know, between people that you just are never going to come back, you know, that they just happened. And so I think, yeah, above a beautiful picture of a table setting, that's going to be, I mean,
yeah,
so important.
Right.
And do you feel like, was there something like in your relationship that led you to this, like the way you're thinking now, or have you always been this kind of wise in regards to marriage, or was it your father dying that kind of turned everything for you?
I think that was a big one. Losing him was a big one. But there have been plenty of huge fuck-ups along the way, too. Like, there have just been some mistakes that we've both made, some choices we've both made we wish we could take back. Mm-hmm. You know, there have been and then you grow into those mistakes. And you decide not to grow around them or grow past them. You decide to grow into, okay, what was that about? Who was I? And why was I pointing the finger at you? Why, you know? And so I think that we go through our lives and we have this chance to actually experience them. We have the chance, all of us, equal opportunity life. it's just so few of us actually decide to step into it. You know, as soon as it gets really, 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 really hard and awful and messy, or sometimes as soon as it gets really, really exciting and there's this opportunity, so many people decide, okay, this is where my capacity ends. I'm not going there. And I think that Jeremy and I, for whatever reason, we both are wired to say, okay, I'm tempted right now to run away. Yeah. But I think it's going to be worth it if we go into this together. I think it's going to be worth it on the other side.
And have you guys, do you find that you like when one is feeling weaker for some or more off keel or whatever, does the other one rise or do you both kind of like, you capsize and then you both kind of stand the same time?
Yeah, it is interesting. I don't know if one of us can be totally strong while the other one's weak. That does happen a lot. But I also know that, man, I listened to this beautiful interview of an old man, an old woman who had been married for just decades. It was lovely. And they were very real about it. And I think that he came to the point in the interview of saying, the important thing is just that both of you don't give up at the same exact mm-hmm. moment.
That's nice.
And so, you know, and don't give up has been like a mantra for us. We started a workshop for photographers called the Don't Give Up Project the year after my dad died. We have couples sometimes hold a poster that says don't give up on it and we'll give it to them. So I think that's kind of been the story, right? Like even when we're both really weak and really like, this is awful, there's always one of us in that moment that's like, yeah, but I'm not giving up on this, even if you are right now. And that's a pretty great thing, you know?
That's, oh my God, I'm going to steal that. Cause that's, like as a mantra, just because like you said, it's nice to know that, even if you have the like clearness and honesty to say, I want to give up. And the other one's like, well, I'm not. So I'll help you or carry you or, you know what I mean? Like it just
seems. You know, I'll wait for you. I'll sit here and if it takes months, I'll wait for you. And when you change your mind, then I'm going to be like, okay, you're back. Now I want to give up.
You know? You took sometimes such a long time. No.
Sometimes it looks like that. And that's okay. I just think that it's a great opportunity. Love and hate and longevity and marriage. It's a great opportunity to practice being human while we still can. Yeah. And I'm thankful for that.
Yeah. We've been listening to this song a lot recently where one of the texts in this, one of the lyrics is something about only when we're about to die do we truly learn how to live. And we've been talking a lot about that, which is kind of what you guys are defying a little bit now, but maybe thanks to being so close to the death of your father and that whole notion that like you said, just to be intentional about things. Cause I think it is easy to just kind of the days, you know, you were like trying to live really long, everyone, but then it's like, what are you going to do with that time? I mean, are you spending that time wisely or is it just to be here, just to breathe, just to exist, you know?
Right.
Go ahead.
And nobody knows. Nobody knows when their time is, right?
Like, right.
So yeah, it's, you know, maybe it's easier when it's defined for you, when it's like, I've been given the death sentence or whatever.
Right.
But the truth is, like the real macabre, like hard truth, and not to get totally macabre about all of this, like it's a beautiful life to live. It really is. But like we are all going to end up in the ground someday, as it were. Like and which of us can decide when that's going to happen? Like, so, you know, I think when you're young, it's easy to say, oh, that's so far in the future. That just, like, today doesn't matter so much. Right. And as you get older, it begins to gain more importance. But the problem is, who the heck knows? Like, which of us can say when we'll go? And I think that that awareness grows whenever, sadly, whenever we take our son to the hospital, which has been more frequently lately. You know, we go in there and there are families grieving the loss of their child around us. Oh. It's awful and it's scary and it's also real.
Yeah, it's just as real as everything else we experience on a daily basis.
And so those kind of experiences have a chance. You can either shut it off and numb yourself, or you can stare at it and go, okay, reality is scary and hard, and it drives us to want to do things a little bit differently than just to, you know, numb ourselves and, you know, kind of piss every day away. 'Cause today actually does matter. So.
Yeah, author Annie Dillard, I don't know if you've ever read her. She's fantastic. But she has this quote in one of her books that says, how we spend our days is, of course, how we spend our lives. And I think we all have a tendency to forget that. And of course, someone's probably pinning that on a Pinterest board right now.
A lot of people.
You know, not realizing that every pin, every 5 seconds, every 5 minutes, every 5 hours spent on that pursuit is how they're spending their life. And it's contributing to their legacy. And so it's just a fascinating thing to say, okay, to, you know, wake up in the morning, to have coffee together and to say, okay, how about today? You know, this is one day in a lifetime of days, and quickly it has come and quickly it will be over. And so how do we want to spend today? You know, because how we spend today is how we spend our life, like it or not, good, bad, and ugly and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And we get the choice, you know, we still can have the power of decision and not co-sign that over to our culture or our friends or expectations.
Or our mortgage, like,
right.
Like what to go. So wait, the fact that you're even sitting here talking to me is like such an honor. You decided you wanted to spend the time with me.
Wow.
This is a huge honor for us, of
Seriously.
Course. Like,
oh my gosh.
I'm really emotional now after you. Can you guys come hang over at our house?
Yes, please.
No, but you're so right. How we spend our days is how we spend our lives. That's so powerful. Do you do that then in the morning? Like you, not me. I mean, every day, like, what's on the schedule for today? I mean, what are we going to do today? Or what's the goal for today? Or
yeah.
I mean, there's always work to be done and there's children to be raised and there is a house to take care of and there's a woman to love and, you know, and hopefully me to love too. So, you know, like we have a family, we have a business, and we have a house that all need care and time. And so, I mean, we could waste a lot of time on Netflix or whatever, but that's not part of the plan today. So,
how do you prioritize in that huge, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. How do you prioritize in that? I mean, And I'm literally taking notes here because I want to know. But how do you how does that? Because I mean, I feel like it's so easy to fall into the stuff that where someone's waiting for something. That's what you have to do that first. Like, just get that out of the way, and then you have time with your kids and stuff. But I mean, that's all wrong. That's backwards.
Right. so backwards. And I think that we, for a really long time, I have wanted to, like, write something or stand up at a podium and totally defame this idea of work-life balance. Yeah. Because it's, like, the sexy thing to say. Just like back in the day, it was really sexy to say you were busy. Or, you know, in our Mother's Day, it was really sexy to say I'm juggling. I can't think of a more anxiety-producing white unicorn than work-life balance.
Absolutely.
What I can think of doing, what does sound human to me, is that when we wake up in the morning, by really the miracle of God giving us breath in our lungs, which we have no control over, we get to choose to be present. And so in the morning with coffee, usually the kids all pile in our bed. And it's a cluster because then somebody inevitably, like, 5 minutes later is injured, right? Yeah. One of the kids is, like, kicks the other one, or somebody accidentally bit someone or whatever, you know? So right off the bat, we get this chance to be present and to walk into this day with intention and with a purpose, which is, okay, we're going to live this day, and whatever happens, I hope that my heart stays open. That was always a thing for my dad. He always encouraged me, just let your heart stay open. And man, as we've, excuse me, that'll be nice. You know, as we've experienced loss, and as we continue to walk into hardship with our youngest, I think I'm seeing more and more that, man, every day we have the choice to let these things in our life that are beautiful and awful break our hearts closed, you know, like concave them on themselves to the supernatural, to this mysterious force that is the love of God that wants to seek us and make a purpose out of our day, or it can break our hearts open. And we have a lot of choice in that. You know, we try to pretend we don't, but we do. We have a lot of choice if we're going to live today as open-hearted people or close-hearted people. And so right now we're in the season of choosing open. And I think the more that we do that, the more that we're present. So we're present with the coffee and the kids and with one another in the morning. And then we're present with probably some time in the trailer to work on our podcast, which is a really fun little, like, creative project for us right now. When we quit social media 15 months ago, we started podcasting about it, not very frequently and not very well. We are not good at it. It is hard. Podcast, whoever's listening to this podcast, if it sounds good, that was a lot of work. It's hard, right? Yeah, it takes so much work. Sound editing is crazy. So we're on that growth curve of, like, wow, how do you talk into a microphone, especially when you're trying to, like, read something or say something that you really need to say without sounding like a robot? Yeah. No, it's hard.
I particularly am not good at that. So.
Yeah, you just looked at Jeremy like, not robot.
This guy over here. No.
Half of us are not good at that. And it is,
I'm not naming any names here, but yeah.
Right. No, it's just, but that's fun. And we involve our kids in that now. We decided in season two that they would be a really big part of it because it's affected them just as much as us, for us to be off of there. And then, you know, we'll spend time with working on our photography business. We'll take care of the chickens because we have chickens now.
Oh my God.
Crazy. We'll probably take the kids to the pool and we'll plan something for dinner and we'll cook it together. You know, like, this day is, it's either going to be spent with us being present in those moments where we need to be, or it isn't. And at the end of the day, we have to give Zion his medicine in hopes that he won't have a seizure in the middle of the night. And then we have to put a monitor on him so that if he stops breathing, we run into his room and give him CPR, you know? And so knowing that that's how our day is going to end, that sure does adjust the way I want to spend it. The things I want to read and take in, the conversations I want to have with my friends and how I have those. I'm like a huge fan of FaceTime right now because face-to-face is always better than a text or a phone call. I love being able to see their face and show them how random my hair is today.
Yeah. How really real.
Exactly. And man, what a gift, right? That idea that we actually do get to be real. We don't have to go through some process.
I think a lot of people, I'm realizing through just my own living life, I feel like go through maybe their entire life without taking off that like mask of, you know, well, hello there. You know, I mean, right. What you guys are doing is just the way you are is unique. I mean, unique in the sense that it's not common and it's that you're both kind of on the same page and that, I mean, you rarely see that. And to say that is kind of scary, you know? Yeah. I mean, how many people are out there just like basically Facebooking perfect pictures of how they spent their day? I mean, like building up maybe an image of what their life is like. I mean, that's very common.
It is.
Yeah.
And it was us, you know? Totally. It's easy to be that. And, man, I almost feel like it's what was it that guy said that was so beautiful? God will take you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, where you did not expect to go. God will take you where you did not expect to go to produce in you what you couldn't bring about on your own. Like,
right.
Which is a phrase that has kind of radically shifted our life over time.
Yeah, to accept these things, these places we didn't expect to go and these places we don't want to go.
Right.
Yeah. Like, you know, there are a lot of days I don't want to be that mother holding her son's hand walking through a cemetery and him looking at, you know, there's this headstone that's like the size of a rhinoceros, and it is a rhinoceros, literally a headstone, a cement rhinoceros. And for him to say last night, if I die, I could live under a rhinoceros. And there's an 8-year-old boy's body buried under that rhino. And he just happened to love those animals. And so his parents honored him in that way. Mm. But he's not with them anymore. And so I don't want to be that mom. I don't want to. There are days where I don't want to have to live this story.
Right.
I would really like a trade-in deck and to say, okay, God, could you please give me just the healthy kids? Like, can you make him better now? Because living this way with our hearts breaking open every day, it costs a lot.
Yeah.
It's not free. You know, the wisdom and the rawness that comes from living that way every day, it is costly. But then I think about who we were before it, and I think about what life would be like without it, and I wouldn't really be alive. And so I would so much rather walk towards my grave every day knowing that, oh my gosh, there's nowhere else I'd rather be than holding this kid's hand in this cemetery. I would so much rather have had my eyes opened by all of these things that God has given and allowed in our lives and call it grace than walk through life with this closed, bitter heart and call it injustice.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, these are good things because this is being human. And And I think there is this culture of, don't make me go there. Don't make me think the thing. Don't make me cry. Right. Don't make me sad. Don't remind me of anything real. Let's just keep it all happy, y'all. Let's just curate our Instagram feeds and let's just care about things that really, you know, we're going to pretend they matter today. They don't matter. And when we're 75 years old, we're going to look back and what do you have to show for it? Mm-hmm. What matters? Who are you?
What are you going to remember? I mean,
yeah. And I can say that from years of living that way before we really woke up, we already have enough regrets, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And even living this way, we still have regrets, you know? I'm looking back on things I did or didn't do yesterday and wishing, man, I really should have had that conversation with Jeremy. I'm going to have that today.
Yeah.
Or, man, I really wish I would have intentionally taken time to hug and look in the eyes of the older boys more. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to do that today.
Yeah.
You know, that's a good thing, right?
Well, I think that's the paradox of the whole thing, which is kind of what you're saying, is that, I don't know, can you really know what's important in life if you're not faced with those things? I don't know. I mean,
right.
Can you know, like in Sweden, can we appreciate sun, the midnight sun and the warm weather if we don't go through these months of hell? I don't know if you appreciate it. And that's kind of like, I don't think so, actually. I don't think you can, like, just have everything be great and appreciate it. You have to, like, see the other side, or you just, that becomes normal somehow.
That's right. That's right. And I think, you know, the beautiful thing and the awful thing is that we all get a chance, right? Because if you're walking around today and someone you dearly love is not on death's door or already crossing over that threshold, or you yourself don't have cancer or some arbitrary something going on, you're on the clock, right? We're all on the clock. And so are all of the people that we love and all of the people that we hate and all of the people that we envy. We're all on the same clock. And so just being open to, okay, today's great. Today, my biggest concern is taxes and how to get more followers. I hope that the people who walk around in that vein are also aware of, but there's going to come a day and there's going to come a moment where I have an opportunity to be human.
Yeah.
And it may even present itself to me today. And either I'll recognize it or I won't. Either I'll take that opportunity and see someone in the car next to me who reminds me of this friend that I'm kind of estranged from. And I'll either say, man, I really want to write that friend. That reminds me of that friend. I want to pursue that friend today and just let them know that I remember them. Or I'll say, what a weird coincidence. There's people that look like her. That's strange.
Yeah.
You know, like, we're all presented with these opportunities every day to, will you do the human thing or will you not?
Yeah.
And so I think that hopefully we all encourage each other to do the human thing,
well,
you know?
You're encouraging me right now. I feel like I'm, oh, wow. Like, so awesome. Yeah.
It's so sweet. You're wonderful.
And I'm good thing there's no video because I'm crying too. But I don't care. I mean, like you're saying, it's nice to live too. I mean, I know so many people who say just exactly what you said. Like, oh, no, I don't want to talk about that. That makes me sad. Then you're like, okay, so should we talk about the weather? I mean, what does that mean, you know? I don't know.
Yeah.
So tell me about, because you have Zion and then two other boys, Micah and Tyler?
Mm-hmm.
How old are they? And just briefly tell me a little bit about each one.
Our boys. man, they're the best. Micah is 12 and a half, that is.
Oh.
Almost a teenager.
Almost a teenager, that's crazy.
So he's right in the right in the wheelhouse of that awkward stage in life, right? Like transitioning from being a kid into a young adult. And, but he is just, he's awesome. He's brilliant. He's type A. He loves lists and making sure things are colored like within the lines. And he is a great reader. He's far better of a reader than I ever will be. And he's 12. Yeah.
We cannot get to the library fast enough every week to replenish the books he's read and get him the new ones that are on hold. And, wow. Oh, my gosh, he reads like crazy. It's amazing.
Micah is also a kid at 12 who I found I spent a really great day with our older boys about a week ago. And we were walking around this theme park and riding roller coasters. And I looked down and he's holding my hand. And I just went, this is great. I'm not ready for him to be older yet. So, Micah, he's got awesome freckles and he cares about doing his hair, which is,
yeah, this is a new thing,
which is,
way too much pomade and always in the back. We're like, listen, we need to have a talk about the fun of your hair.
Yeah.
We've got to pray about this because this is a problem.
And he last time one of his friends who is a girl who came over and she's the same age as him, he's known her for years. She's coming over and I don't know if he's gonna listen to this someday, but that's okay. But like he disappears into the bathroom and he's like, well, I gotta do my hair. It's like Eva's coming over? I gotta go do my hair. It's like, oh, we're going into that stage of life now. Yeah. Okay.
And then 20 minutes later, he does it the second time. A second time.
It wasn't quite right.
Just a touch up, like he felt it was something was up.
Yeah. Little extra pomade. Yep. It was like cement hair.
She's like 8 inches taller than him now. So.
Oh, God. I can't even, like.
Oh, my gosh.
And you just know he's going to get his heart broken at some point.
Absolutely.
Break someone's heart, and you're just that whole thing, those experiences that you don't want to be without, but they're going to be painful.
No, and it already. I mean, this year was middle school for the first time for him, and he had this gal that he really liked, and he asked her to the dance, or he was going to ask her to the dance, and he told his friend. Well, his friend cuts in line and asks her to the dance first, and she says yes. And he comes home, you know, and I'm like, okay, so how'd it go? And he said, well, the kid's name, I won't say it. His parents would never hear this, but I just won't say it. He says, so-and-so asked her first.
Let's call him the jerk for this podcast.
Yeah, the jerk asked her first. And I was like, I couldn't even filter myself. I was like, oh, my gosh, I will shank him.
I don't even know what that means, but it doesn't sound nice.
And then he looked at me and he's like, Mom, stop. He's my friend and she's my friend and I just want them to be happy. Oh, it's fine that he asked her. So
and then our hearts exploded.
He's that kid. He's the kid who, like, most empathetic kid ever, so intelligent, so kind.
Yeah.
And obsessed with the Beatles, and so he plays the Beatles on the piano, and there are times where I'm like,
if I hear that,
Lord,
one more
give
time.
Me strength. Exactly. I'm like, look, the Beatles were fine, but this is getting a little extreme. So he's special.
He sounds amazing.
Yeah.
He really is. Tyler.
We're really proud. And then Tyler just turned 11. Tyler is our... Tyler is our dreamer. Mm-hmm. He is the kid that you will find outdoors more often than not.
Mm-hmm.
He will either be playing baseball by himself in the backyard and pretending to run the bases and having his head by himself, or like outside with a sword. You know, like he's that kid.
Yeah.
He's the kid that somebody would videotape like doing moves with a sword out in the yard. And it's just he has to do it. Micah on the one hand can sit and like watch a movie and be like engrossed in it. Tyler like will watch a movie for like 15 minutes and be like, oh, I gotta go outside and play.
Oh, God.
And so he's the dreamer. And the two of them, they're 18 months apart. We had two pretty back-to-back. And they are like an old married couple. They're they're inseparable, and they bicker, and they are so different, and they love each other probably the most of anybody on Earth. And so we're really fortunate that they have each other. It makes summer vacations a lot easier. They swim together, and they...
They can be adventurous together.
That's right.
Like, we have an old baseball diamond at the end of our street because we live in kind of this historic neighborhood with these larger plots. And so they'll get on their bikes and they load up their backpacks with all their baseball stuff and snacks and water. And then the two of them will just ride off to that baseball diamond and just play for hours, the two of them.
Wow.
And come back all sweaty and tired. And they just, they are best friends. And I think, you know, having a younger brother that goes through the stuff that he goes through, they cling to one another for support. Like, there have been some nights where I have to take Zion to the emergency room, and we'll get back at 3 in the morning or 4 in the morning. And I peek in on their room, and both of them in their single beds, they've crawled into one bed together to keep each other company. And, you know, I just see how they've had to go through these hard things too. We're not the only ones going through them. They're going, this is their life too. This is the story of their growing up, for crying out loud. Jeez, Louise, can you imagine?
And this is like, and I bet you guys as parents are also like mindful of, you know, Zion needs you, and also Micah and Tyler need you. I mean, like, so then there's the juggling of time and attention and listening to what their worries are, and if they're in the mood to talk, you don't want to let that moment go by either.
Right. And they're really good about, they're just really special. They're just really special. They're very, very empathetic and very aware. And so I find that it's maybe especially since we quit social media, there's just been a lot more time and honestly attention to be able to notice who they are. And so there will be days where they probably need me to go in and check on them. But instead, you know, Micah or Tyler will come in and sit next to me on the couch while I'm reading and say, "How you doing, Mom? Do you need a hug?"
Oh, my God.
You know, and of course, in that moment, I'm like, yes, all I need is a hug. But instead, I'm reading this book and I'm thinking that if I read this book and learn something new, it'll make my life better, you know. And what I really need is a hug from you. And they're just really special that way. Wow. And then Zion is 5.
And Zion is 5.
He's adopted.
He's adopted. He's the most beautiful, beautiful brown skin child you'll ever see in your life. Oh. He's gorgeous.
Yes, he is.
So, yeah, it's funny because, like, you know, he is every bit like what, like, you look at him, he's the complete antithesis of everybody else. Like, and he is every bit an essential member of the family at the same time. It is, adoption is something that until you experience it, it is, you just don't know. It's kind of like having a baby. Like, what's it going to be like to love this child? Or when you have your second baby, like, well, can I really love this second child as much as the first?
Right.
Or can I really love this adopted little boy as much as these two? And the answer is yes. Like, and Zion is, he needs physical touch more than anybody else. He's the biggest extrovert that we have in our family. He loves to laugh and dance, and he's loud. In like the best ways, it's sometimes in the worst ways, but like the best ways, meaning like he's ready to laugh, and the next door neighbors will hear him laugh, you know, and he'll squeal with delight just because his brothers are rolling a car to him or something on the floor. Mm. He loves his brothers a lot.
Oh yeah.
And,
we adopted him when he was, So when he was born, he was 2.5 pounds. He was 3 months early.
Wow.
And so when we adopted him, he was 3 pounds at that point and still living in the NICU in an incubator. And so we'd go in every day and I would like stick him in my shirt, literally just hold him there skin to skin for about 8 hours a day for the first month of his life. And it's just fascinating because I look at Zion's life and it's as though God made all of this happen, right? And adoption is great. Like, you don't get to adopt a child into your family unless he was not welcomed into another one. And so right there at the foundation of Zion's life is this story of, man, if it was a perfect world, his parents would be raising him, right?
Right.
But because it's a broken world, we get to raise him and we get to hold him. And I feel like God gave us Zion to show us how beautiful his love is. Wow. Just unrelenting joy from this little boy. Even with all of the pain he goes through medically, he'll be at the hospital with multiple people sticking multiple needles in him. And 5 minutes later, he'll say, I really love my hospital. I really love my doctors.
Oh,
you know, he's that kid, like happy and thankful to be wherever he is.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's really funny. The local newspaper did a story on our family. They somehow, through someone who knew us, found out we had adopted, right, 5 years ago. And so they're like, oh, let us come and we're doing a story on adoption. We want to take your photo and talk to you about adopting him. And so they came and they did it. And a couple of weeks later, there it is. And the headline in all caps, this baby needed them. And my heart broke. I read that and just went, no, 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 no. You don't understand.
You like, got it all backwards.
Oh my gosh. This family needed this baby. This family was so wrapped up. These parents were so wrapped up in wedding photography, in blog stats, in comments, in who's noticing me next, or follower numbers, or, well, we didn't book that wedding in that place, but we booked that beach wedding in this place, so that's going to be cool. You know, like, this family had lost all perspective on forever, what really matters forever.
Yeah.
And was so focused on what matters in the next 5 minutes. And then God gave us Zion. And every 5 minutes, we are just like, he's still here with us. He's still magnificent. We still get to be in us. We still get to be the five of us today. Oh my gosh, God, what must you be like? Like, mm-hmm. That you'd give this, you know, out of brokenness would come this.
And his life, I mean, he only knows his life, you know, I mean, he's never been a perfectly healthy little boy. So he's like, this is what you do. I'm right,
right.
Or maybe
that's right. That's exactly right. And I told someone recently, like, that's the pain of being his mother, right? Because for Zion, I heard someone say, and I think it's brilliant, when you experience a loss or a death or a suffering at the beginning of your life, you grow from it, right? You're growing from that place. And that's what you know. But when you experience a loss later in life, you have to grow into it.
Yeah.
And I think that for Jeremy and I, we're experiencing the suffering that Zion's going through much later in life. And we're having to grow into that with him. But that's his baseline, you know? And so he's like, you know, I think it's time for us to go to my hospital again. And I'm like, yeah, I think you're right. Or we'll be driving there and he'll say, is this going to hurt me? And I'll say, yeah, I think it probably is, but I'm not going to leave you. I'm going to lay in the bed next to you the whole time. And he said, okay, mommy. You know, so he accepts that. I'm the one who every time is like, dear God, why does this kid have to go through this?
Yeah.
He's five and he's magic and he should be worrying about where his Legos are right now, not how many needles they're going to put in him this time, yeah. You know? So, oh my gosh. Well, what a wild ride.
I think anybody would be privileged and better for it to meet our three boys.
Are you bringing them to Sweden?
I don't think so. With Ryan's health, we can't really take him more than 20 minutes away from his children's hospital because his surgeons are there and they've got him under a pretty close watch. We talked about the older two, but when we leave, because we've traveled a lot for work, and when we leave, the three of them, they are each other's family, you know? And as long as the three of them are there, we get back and their tanks are still full.
Yeah.
If we disrupt the force, if we take one of them away, it's literally like, oh, there's a disruption in the force.
Yeah.
Nice, though. That's nice to know that they can give each other that you're not just pivotal to that. It's like a working kind of ecosystem, if you will.
That's right.
And who watches them when you guys are traveling?
Well, it's a mix. We have really good nannies that we hire sometimes that have become friends of ours over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom lives in town also. She works during the week, so it's not always possible to use her. But
once in a while, stay. Yeah, which is great.
So,
and are you guys traveling less than now with everything going on? Which, by the way, I'm so sorry that you have to go through this. This must be extremely painful. I don't even know. I mean, there are no words. But
thank you.
Are you working? Like less? I mean, obviously, yes, but are you traveling less?
We are and we aren't. You know how it is when you book your weddings for the year. Those are the weddings you're going to shoot, right? And so Jeremy is working no less. He's traveling no less. I am. I'm staying home for a lot of our weddings and we're having to replace me at those weddings. And contractually, that's kind of how it works with our couples. And this is where it really does, it's a great thing that we care about our couples enough to talk to them and form some kind of an understanding and relationship ahead of time. Because they already, you know, by the time they've signed a contract, they already know about Zion. They already know what our lives look like, and we sit down with them here in this trailer and get on Skype with them, and we're as honest with them as we are with you. And so they get that, and it's the couples that don't get that, and they're like, ooh, no, not my thing. That's fine, and they'll find someone who's great for them. But the couples who connect to who we are and the way we tell stories, they understand, you know, they don't want me to not, but of course, every single one of them says, that's exactly where you should be. You should be at home with him.
Yeah.
And so I've missed a handful of weddings this year and I will miss more. And that's something that I'm okay with, because in those moments when we're in the hospital, I know that no one else can be to Zion what he needs but me. And it's part of the joy of being his mom.
Yeah.
And also sometimes it really sucks, you know, sometimes it really sucks to miss that wedding that is for a family that we've cared about for years because we photographed their other son's wedding. And, you know, it's hard, but yeah, we're doing what we can. And as life continues to present these circumstances, we're adjusting, we're being present to them as best as we can, you know.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh God, I have snot everywhere. Hang on, the sound got bad for a second. Let me see if I can. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
I can't hear you that great. Let me try to turn off the video for a second and see if it gets better.
Yeah, I guess I could do that too.
Oh, see, I immediately hear you better. Good.
Really? Okay. Good.
Yes, because it was cutting up a little.
Should I turn off the
video? Yeah, try it and we'll see. They can cut out this part of the chat.
Where do I do that?
It's at the bottom. There's like a little icon that says stop video. Yes. There's a video, microphone, a plus sign, and a hang up.
Here we go. Your video is turned off.
Okay.
There we go.
Perfect. The sound is good now.
okay, good.
Which is good because, literally, I've been crying so much that I have, like, snot between, like, just in strings from my nose. I mean, obviously, that it makes total sense what you're saying, Ashley, about needing to be there. It's just, I think it's really interesting to hear and has been to just kind of hear this personal side. I mean, you tell it because since the wedding, I mean, all of the wedding photographers and obviously everyone going like way up north and listening to this are, everyone has a private life. I mean, a life outside of wedding photography, mm-hmm. and everyone has an interest in knowing like, how to mesh those two and like, you know, finding priorities. I think a lot of people are worried about followers and comments still. I don't know. Do you guys get the feeling that quitting social media has been shocking to some people, or what has the reaction been?
I mean, you get off of social media, you don't see a lot of reaction. So,
you're like, I have no idea. We're completely in the dark.
Yeah. I don't like what people are saying. Yeah. I mean, I think that it shocked some people. It has shocked many of our friends. Mm-hmm. You know, they're like, okay, what's this all about? And come on, seriously, when are you coming back? It's like, I don't even know what we would do on social media right now. The culture changes fast.
There's like Snapchat. That wasn't a thing when we were on. We don't even know what it looks like. I'm like, what is Snapchat? What does that look like?
We have literally become like the old people that just have no idea about anything cool anymore. So, you know, we're the people on our front porch going, oh, you pesky kids and your Snapchat. We are.
And literally, like, what we do instead of that time that we would be scrolling through something is we sit on our front porch with our kids, and there are a couple of house finches that this spring laid eggs. And so every day we watch them in their nest as they fly into it and sit on their eggs. We watch the day that the eggs hatched, watch the birds grow, and yesterday they flew away. Like, that has been our past month and a half of life, is every morning on the porch, let's see what the house finches are doing.
Wow.
And maybe that sounds really, really pathetic, but I feel like it teaches me something wonderful about the world. It gives me hope. It teaches our kids something really beautiful about life and let go and growth. And, not to be too deep about it, but the reality is that we wouldn't have even noticed them a year and a half ago. We wouldn't have had time or energy to notice our own kids or our own anything.
Because
followers and
looking
our
phones.
Our feed.
Your feeds. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that so much time right now, it seems like, for photographers is spent curating a feed when we really should be spending that time curating a life. And so I think that, you know, the hard thing is that some of our friends have said stuff since we've left. Close friends that we trust, like we want their opinions, have said this time social media is just where everybody is right now, and you're missing out on that. You need to come back because it's the hot thing right now. It's where everybody spends their lives. And, you know, and we've had other friends who have said, we're really worried about you, and we're worried that you're going to disappear.
Yeah.
And if you stay away much longer, nobody's going to even know or remember who you are.
Oh, wow.
And look, I hear both of those arguments. I can hear it, like, from the inside, from knowing what life was like on the inside of that jail cell for us. I can see how that's the perspective.
Right.
The problem is I can't be good at both. I can't be good at curating a feed and making shitty little photos of every little moment of my life or the moments that I think are sellable and putting words together and putting them out there and keeping up with followers, to keep up with content and following the right people and not following the wrong people. I can't be good at that. And also curating my life and looking my kids in the eyes and not looking at my phone on date night and calling my mother and, you know, getting work done and coming up with new ideas. Because the bottom line is all of our best ideas, I really believe this, are birthed out of boredom. They come from that place. You know, it was weird. I was on a run, or I was in the shower, or I was doing this thing that I can't do with my phone.
Yeah.
And this idea came.
Totally.
Like, to have my own idea, you know? So we don't miss it. And I guess what I say back to those friends when they challenge us is, listen, maybe more people would know who we are and think we're cool. But I would rather live into my life, really into it every single day, and less people know that I did something that mattered than a whole lot of people think I was.
Yeah, no.
Does that make sense?
It totally sense. I mean, I can imagine you must have inspired people around you to quit social media as well. I mean, have you heard any of those stories?
Yeah. We've heard a few stories like that, and I don't know if our intent was ever to like start a revolution against, you know, war against Instagram or something like that. This was just purely for us, and we were careful to say, like,
yeah,
look, if you want to stay on social media, you go for it. Like, we're not here to judge you. We're judging our own life. Mm-hmm. We're judging the look in our own children's eyes. You know, when we first quit, they were like, yeah, we felt it. Mm-hmm. And that just cuts you to the core when you're like, oh, for 4 straight years, we've basically put you guys on the back burner because this little box in my hand is more important than you guys.
Because it feels so big and good, and it's so much easier to relate to.
That's right. And I feel awesome when I get a bunch of likes or whatever. The problem is that's not real.
Yeah.
That's not real life. That's thrilling life. And real life is staring you in the eyes. You get one chance at it. So,
I just never have met someone who's like, I really regret that I'm not spending more time on Instagram.
Right. I mean,
right.
You're so right.
I have a lot of people who regret that they're not knowing their kids more, that they don't know how to reach their kids anymore, that they don't know how to, you know, go to bed with their spouse or their lover without their phone in their bedroom. Like,
yeah,
I, you know, so I just think, and here's the reality, Jenny, this is a weird thing. I think that we've inspired a lot of people or a few to the idea of having social media. And I hate to say it, and hopefully I'll get some email correcting me, but I don't think any of them have stayed off.
Right.
I think we've inspired a lot of people to flirt with the idea of what it would be like if they didn't need it. And then they get it a week or 2 weeks or 4 weeks or 8 weeks in, and they just can't handle the fear that they might be disappearing and that the follower numbers are dropping. And look, I think that the way that we did this was very cold turkey. Like, there is no checking to see if people have followed or unfollowed us. There is no looking back at the app, but just not posting. And I know that a lot of people that have tried to quit after us, they've kind of still lingered on there, if that makes sense, you know?
Yeah. Like just, so, I'm not really on it, but kind of, yeah. Oh, well, I think it's, I'm
experiencing all the worst part of it.
Yeah. You know? I think and obviously you're doing it for yourself, so you're not doing it to get like credit or, you know, but I just think it's so commendable. I'm definitely intrigued, and I'm even more like, I'm excited to meet you guys in person, IRL. And, meeting you like on Skype now is so cool, but I feel like, it's going to be, I am so looking forward to both your presentation at Way Up North, but just kind of like seeing you face to face and like giving you hugs.
Yeah, same.
It means so much. This is wonderful. I'm really honored to be here.
Oh my god!
I mean, I think we could talk for a long time about streaming it. I don't know if we have that time right now, but
no.
But it certainly has been a big part of our story.
Sorry, you talk more about what? I missed the word that you said.
Oh, no, social media. I mean, we could talk for a long time about that and some views that we have on that and the culture, but I fear that we would go way too long and everybody would be asleep by the end.
That's why we have a podcast, right?
Yeah, there's that, but we should have like a little, you know, like a powwow, or I don't know what, like a caucus, when you guys come to Stockholm, mm-hmm. like just about that.
Yeah.
I mean, just that would be,
yeah,
like seriously organize something like that. That would be, but yeah, I think we're sort of out of time for today, but I'm just so like thankful that we had this time together. I know we had some difficulty getting lined up, but wow, what an amazing meeting it's been.
Oh,
thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for being so gracious to,
well,
to carve out the time for it.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
My pleasure. It's been an absolute delight hearing about your lives, about you. I mean, I wish we had another hour, but
anytime you see us here, please just call. It would be such a treat.
I should. I actually should. I have I have to get to my kids now, so they're like waiting for dinner. But you gave me so much to think about. I'm actually going away this weekend with my husband, and like I feel like I'm gonna get Annie Dillard's book, and I just want to sit in like in a restaurant and talk about our conversation with him. So
good.
I look forward to that. You know, it's been a good conversation when I haven't looked at my like preparation notes once. So, but so I'm gonna thank you so much for sharing everything. It's been a true delight.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jenny. Have a wonderful evening.
Thank you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.